Hello and welcome back to the show. Money, money, money. Some say it's what dreams are made of, and some say it's the root of all evil. I think we've all mismanaged a budget at some point in our lives, and for some of us, we've gotten into debt. I'm not talking about that little debt like, yo, homie, I'm gonna pay you back that $5. I mean debt, whether it's bills or you've used a credit card in ways that maybe that your reach exceed your grasp. And the thing about debt is it can weigh you down. It can just distract you from your goals and take away your happiness. But the key to financial literacy is not making more money. It's managing what you owe. Jason Simons, who has been on the show many times, has spent the last year researching credit and finances and the nasty business of debt collectors. And these guys are pretty nasty. So without further delay, episode 199 of the Vandal Trong Curious World podcast, Money versus Debt, starts right now.
You want a podcast? Great. They have some audio on your website that nobody goes to.
You're listening to Vandal Trong's Curious World podcast. Sit back and relax. Everything's going to be cool.
Financial literacy is something that I think everybody can use, no matter if you're, a high school student with no job, or if you're a single mom, or if you're an executive or a CEO. You know, your financial literacy is basically kind of evaluating, your finances, what you need to pay out, because that will indicate, how much money you're taking in. And also, kind of like giving you the compass of how much money you need to make and what type of job and your comfort level of living. Sometimes a lot of us kind of get, our reach exceeds our grasp and we get into debt. I've had financial disasters. And so, but a lot of us don't have the knowledge of how to get out of it, and a lot of us, when it comes to debt, we get really, some of us panic and we don't know how to really, get out of this hole. So with me today, friend of the podcast and real life friend who, Jason and I talk about so many topics, ranging from, pop culture to music, to politics, to art. And, I thought today, we dive into about, the wonderful, fun world of debt collections and things that you may know, but I would imagine there's a lot of things that you don't know. So welcome back, Jason Simons. And why don't you kind of give us kind of an overview of, the world of, we all know about debt, but a lot of people don't really know too much about, these collectors. So why don't you just kind of like...
Everyone, it seems, knows about debt itself, but nobody knows the laws and their rights. And that's part of the problem. And, I had these issues myself a few years ago. And that's how I really didn't know much about the subject. So when I had my various problems, and I made some bad financial decisions and this and that, and one thing leads to another, and all of a sudden you see that they want X amount of money from you every month. They raise your interest rates, they you have a late payment here and there, they raise your interest rates more, then the monthly bill becomes larger, and it just becomes a big problem.
Yeah.
In my case, then my income dwindled down considerably. So I had to make some decisions. And I tried to work with a couple of the creditors to get them to, cut the monthly payments, even if they canceled my card or whatever. A couple of them were store cards. One was a credit card. The credit card was large, but it was killing me every month to pay the monthly interest. And I'm not making excuses for that. I mean, that's, you buy things here and there, you don't keep track of it, and it gets out of control. But the problem is, they have you. They know it, and they don't. At a certain point, maybe if you have a perfect track record of paying for like 4 or 5 years, and suddenly you need a month's grace period, they'll probably give it to you. But if you're at a point where you've been late a few times, and you've fallen behind, I remember one time I did fall deep in the hole. And I had to pay them back, and I had to spend more money. It was already a significant sum of money. I had to spend more money to get out of the hole, plus the late fees and all the other crap they tack on, plus they increase your interest. It was just, it just became a problem. So they weren't really willing to negotiate with me. They were, pay us or else.
So at what point does the credit card or whatever the entity may be, at what point do they kind of peddle you off to an agency that is gonna sick the hounds on you?
Well, it goes through a process. It's like, if you have if you're late 1 month, let's say, and they hit you with the late fee, they increase your interest, like I said. And it goes, that cycle continues. So then 2 months, it's, you owe basically all you owe those 2 months plus extra expenses. And it just keeps snowballing. And it's about the 180-day mark. They do what they call, they'll call you and they'll harass you and all that stuff. But send you letters. When you hit the 180-day mark, they do what they call a charge-off. They're actually required. It's part of the financial banking regulations. It's an accounting procedure. A lot of people look at their credit report, and they see charged off, and they think that the debt is done, and they're actually happy. But actually, it's a misleading term. It's just an accounting term. It means that they've decided at that point the debt is no longer considered an asset, it's a liability. It's a loss, I should say. So they write it off, and they get a tax write-off. So they actually get they still get paid to a degree. They don't get the full amount, maybe, but they get paid, and they write it off. Then they go into two different levels. They can either come after you themselves, like keep coming after you, with you now as a loss, meaning the original as the original creditor, or they sell the debt. They put it up for sale, and they basically sell the title of the debt to what they call a third party collection agency. The third parties, that's probably the big focus I have, because they do a lot of things that are, there's a lot of holes in the argument of whether they really should have any rights in the situation.
Yeah, give us some examples of some that are how many, what's the big, what would you say is the over under of those that are operating legitimately and those that are cutting corners and probably doing illegal stuff?
Well, probably who have done illegal activities or violated the law in some way, probably 100% of them. But some manage to mask their behavior to some degree. I saw a letter. You know, I've done a lot of research on this stuff, and I see a lot of, I read a lot of people's stories. I saw this girl, and she got a letter from Midland Funding, which is one of the big three debt collectors, and they're a huge violator. They've got fines in the millions, and even in the tens of millions, by the government. And I mean, they're just notorious for violations and suing people when they shouldn't, not being able to prove accounts. I mean, they're really bad. Well, they send this girl a letter, and it's this nicely worded welcome letter. Welcome to the Midland family.
I don't want to be part of your family.
it's like we're ready to embark on our partnership to solve your financial issues and work in a way that's mutually beneficial to both of us. It's like so friendly and you would never get the impression that they were doing the stuff that they've done. So they try to mask it and that they're doing you a favor.
So people, yeah, the people aren't aware. So someone in that situation either may be kind of hoodwinked and thinking like, oh, it's a good thing. But then there's the flip side, right? Most of them aren't friendly. Most of them are actually pretty aggressive.
Well, yeah, they all have their different tactics, and especially the smaller ones. The smaller ones, they it's not cost effective for them to try to follow the letter of the law, so they just try to get who they can and squeeze who they can. And some of them have been they've been shut. They go beyond, the government goes beyond finding them. They actually shut them down. Like some of them have actually been told you cannot engage in this business anymore, and you're shut down.
So I know I shared this with you, Jason, but I received a letter from this. It's called Debt Recovery Solutions LLC about a current balance that I have from Verizon of $145.20, and then they give me a discount offer of $108. So that means like I could, you know, save $40. But here's the thing. I closed my Verizon account with a zero balance over a year ago. Now, I don't hang on to that shit. I don't, like, once it's done, like, I just, I don't know why, like, I throw it out. I haven't been on Verizon for over a year. Like, I'm on T-Mobile now. And so this now it says, yeah, Orion Portfolio Solutions, has purchased your account from Verizon, blah, blah, blah. You know, and like the times of when I can call. Yeah, and it's like, so I'm confused, and I'm sure a lot of people, I'm not the only one. I mean, this is clearly like a scam. I have a zero balance. I even got letters from Verizon like begging me to come back. So in this situation, and I know I'm not the only one, So I'm confused of like, should I call them and say, look, fuckers, leave me alone, and then it's like, oh, now we got his phone number, or should I just be like, look, man, I'm just gonna leave him alone.
Well, you can ignore them and see what they do. I mean, they probably don't really. You say you paid off the balance. There's some accounting error on Verizon's part, or they just somehow, or that agency somehow got a hold of those numbers and just. Somehow it wound up on the because basically what the original creditor, whether it's a phone company, whether it's a credit card company, whatever it is, whether it's a loan from a bank, they sell the charged off or the accounts that are considered that they've given up on. They sell them off in what they call a portfolio. So they bundle them together. They bundle them together and they put them on an Excel spreadsheet. And basically a buyer, you know, there's these debt collectors will buy a portfolio of accounts. Now, there's no way to say, it's not like they get the contract. It's not like they get a packet a FedEx packet with all these documents and a copy, the signed contract or whatever. They don't have any of that. They have an Excel spreadsheet that has a name, maybe the person's name, the person's address, the person's phone number, and the amount. Sometimes a little more information, usually not. That's all they really have. So there's no way to know whether that information is even accurate. There's no way to know whether they don't care. They see numbers on the Excel spreadsheet. They're not looking at accuracy. And the account may not even be legitimate. It may not. You say you paid. You know for sure you paid them off. So they very likely made up an account. Somehow it got lost in their paperwork. They didn't delete it. Someone didn't press delete when you paid it off, and the amount was there, and it just got somehow added to one of these portfolios. And somebody was at the end of the day and just put it on the spreadsheet and just to type a few more things in to get the day done, and there you go. All of a sudden, you're now in the possession of this sleazy debt collector.
Yeah, you looked up these guys, right? They're in Syosset, New York.
Yes, they have a presence. I mean, I don't know if they're. See, they have to be licensed in order for these debt collectors to collect. They have to be licensed in the state that they're collecting in. So you'll find some of the smaller ones are only licensed in a few states. So they won't go. Although sometimes that doesn't stop them from trying to collect anyway, because they can just misrepresent. But in general, they're supposed to be licensed in the state. So if they're collecting in New York, they need to be licensed in New York.
So those other ones that are located in like various states, like Norfolk, Virginia, for instance, they are licensed in other. They're licensed in, say, like New York.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Looks like the one you're talking about, which is Portfolio Recovery Associates. They're pretty much among the biggest. They're another of the big three. The big three are essentially Portfolio, Midland, and one called LVNV.
LVNV.
LVNV. The letters.
Oh.
All capital letters. Those are the three big debt collectors in terms of volume.
Do they all have the same staffing structure and lunchtime etiquette?
I'm sure they do. Unfortunately, only Portfolio has a Facebook page they've been able to find and look at.
So for folks listening, I encourage you to go to Facebook and look up Portfolio's. I guess it's their homepage.
It's actually just a Facebook page that someone created, and then employees post stuff on there.
So all employees.
They have multiple Facebook pages, but there's one in particular.
Why don't you describe what somebody can learn about Portfolio going into this page?
The bosses order lots of chicken and. And pass out chicken to keep them quiet, I guess.
The actual collectors or what do they call, like, consultants or whatever, people are on the phones all the day. I think they're like 99.9% all African American, and they're tossed like buckets of Popeye's chicken.
Chick-fil-A, they buy the Chick-fil-A and just pass it out.
And the executive board is all white people.
They just look at the thing and they say, "Well, we have all these employees. Just get them Chick-fil-A and keep them happy."
Now, I looked up. I read this article. I think it was SimpleDollar.com about somebody who had some experiences with some, like, outlier people who were operating illegally, and the article that she wrote was, these are three things that you want to look out for, or that you want to ask if somebody calls you. Number one, ask them what is the name, address, and phone number of the of the agency you're calling from. Which was surprising because that's, well, number one, that's not something that nobody thinks of, because nobody usually would, somebody will call and just say, I'm calling from Orion or Midland or whatever.
Yeah, most people don't know these companies' name. They know they didn't do, but when you bought a TV, you didn't buy a TV from Midland Funding. And Midland Funding didn't give you the credit card. So when you hear from Midland Funding, you're like, what the heck is this?
And then number two, what is the name and address of the debtor that you're trying to reach? Which I found interesting. I mean, most of the time it's letters, but what she was saying in her article is that sometimes they just get bare bones information and try to scrape the barrel to get some money that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the smaller ones will do any tactics to try to get some money. Their only focus is to get money. Well, you could say that about all of them. Their focus is to get money, but the big ones know how to. They have a wide variety of techniques because they're big and it's funny. I looked in portfolios. I looked at their annual report. The annual corporate report, and they actually have money in their budget, and not a small amount. They have money in their annual budget for lawsuits and fines.
Jeez. Like
they know they're getting hammered multiple times during the year, so they just automatically allot funds for that purpose.
Now,
so they're able to eat the.
I'll round this up. So the third item that she suggests is ask the caller what are the last four digits of the Social Security number of the debtor that you're trying to reach.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't even know, and hopefully, I'm glad they don't know that. But, so my question to you is, if they have your file, do they have information like that?
Well, if they got a hold of you, they at least have your address, they have an address, they have a name and an address, they're contacting you. They may not have your Social Security. Really, most people don't know this, but the laws are, they're not really, this is an Achilles heel with these people. They're not really supposed to have your Social Security number and be passing it around. But nobody thinks to call them out on that.
Wait, they're not supposed to pass it around, or they're not supposed to have
it,
period?
Pass it around, I use the term passing around, but what I'm saying is if Capital One has your account and they sell it to Portfolio, if it has your Social Security, it's now gone through a broker. Meaning a broker will take the spreadsheet of the information and then will put it online to sell, and then the buyer, whether it's Midland or whoever, will then have the, so your information is literally being passed around.
And that you're saying that, what are they legally allowed to distribute and sell off?
See, here's the thing, it's not really clear. It's not a lot of this stuff is not, you have to look at various laws and you have to look at various case laws where stuff has been argued, because there's been a lot of vague, the details have been vague in terms of establishing specific points for how everyone has to act. So courts have to settle this out. So you almost have to look at case law. Which is why it's complicated. There is what's called the FDCPA, which is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It was enacted in 1977 to keep people from essentially, because before that it was a free-for-all with debt collection. They basically come to your house. They were threatening people. They were knocking on their door at like midnight and screaming for them to come out. It was nuts what they were doing before that. So the Congress passed the FDCPA, and that basically gives a guideline as to how they should act. The problem is there's a lot of holes in it. There's a lot of which is to your advantage if you're dealing with a collection agency, because it gives you a lot of vague language like unfair and misleading actions in terms of how they're trying to collect. Deceptive means, they use a lot of words like that, which give you some leeway in terms of how to fight back against them. But essentially, what you really want to do if you're in trouble with these people is not just learn the FDCPA, but learn the laws in general. Learn like how they pass your Social Security information around. I believe it's 6801 USC. Tells them that they can't be passing it. Most people don't know about it, so they don't use it. You have rights, but if you don't invoke your rights, you will not. If you don't invoke your rights, nobody will invoke them for you. Is essentially the point.
Right. It's like somebody just shoving you. You can shove them back.
Yes. You have to learn further that there are further laws in order to defend yourself against. A lot of people just use the FDCPA, but the FDCPA doesn't explain certain things, so it doesn't get into whether they can pass their Social Security number around. So that's left out. That's not of the. For them to have your Social Security number is not necessarily a violation of that.
No,
but it's a violation of other laws.
So Jason actually is a big purveyor of citizens and of citizens' rights on he's helped a lot of people on Facebook and on a couple different groups. There's one person that you helped out that she was reporting that somebody was threatening, he was threatening, a collector was threatening to come to her place of work or her where she lived.
Yeah, actually, this is a tactic a lot of them use, the smaller ones. I mean, you don't see this as much with the big companies. But yeah, the tactic they have is they'll call you and they'll tell you they have legal papers for you and they need to come see you. So you basically have a single woman living in an apartment has this guy basically saying he's demanding to give her these legal papers. And, of course, she puts up an argument. He says, well, then I'll come to your workplace. I'll see you at your workplace. And they use this. This is a common tactic. They try to scare people. It's illegal. It's a violation of the law. But they use this tact. That's actually a violation of the FDCPA.
Well, I mean, that's just plain and simple harassment, right? I mean, that if she calls the cops, and the cops show up, and he's there at her place of work, it's over for him, right?
Yeah, then he's got a problem. The thing is, they don't usually, when they use that tactic. I mean, I haven't found an example. I'm sure maybe it has happened. I have not found a single example of the person doing that threatening actually showing up, like a guy standing there with papers.
It's like a Chinese takeout menu.
Yeah, I have never heard of it. They usually just threaten to do it, and they'll keep calling you and saying they're going to give you these papers. And they try to instill fear. But like someone said in one of the forum, the credit forums, I go on. Okay, I told the guy, me and Smith and Wesson are waiting for you, or my Magnum in my other hand. We're waiting for you. And then they never hear from that place again.
So speaking of financial literacy, I think, you know, I remember overhearing two young people talking to each other, and one person was advising the other. I was like, oh, just use your credit card because that's like free money. I think in this country there, we have such a almost illiteracy when it comes to financial intelligence. Payday loans is money that's lent out with an extremely high interest rate, with an agreement that this money will be repaid by the borrower, once the borrower receives the next paycheck, hence payday loan. But these interest rates are like 200%, 500%, and it's astronomical. It's crazy. And what's sad is, when I go home to my area of Virginia, which is more of the southern area, and it's like a high military, and there's areas that are low income. There's a lot of signs. There's a lot of businesses that say we do payday loans, and it's pretty depressing because they wouldn't have those signs unless people are walking in there. I think, you know, it sounds like in theory, yeah. I mean, if you need, I don't know, if you get sick and you don't have insurance, then I can see that. And I'm not saying, everybody, there's certainly the need there. But man, I just feel like it's like signing a contract with the devil.
Yeah, payday loans, it's probably should stay away from. They're illegal in some states. Some states don't even allow that to occur. I'm not too familiar with them, but I know that, they become very aggressive in their collection tactics, and usually quite often use the lower level debt collectors. Not that any debt collectors are great, but they use the real bottom of the barrel types. So
no debt collector is going to be like a Neil Ferguson or Sebastian Gorka in the intelligence department.
No, unfortunately, you're getting some Goomba from down the street.
So I don't know if you've seen this this TV ad. I think I may have mentioned this to you in the past. It's this ad, and you've got a lot of people who are like, I wanted to go to the movies, but I don't get paid till next week. And so there's this thing on there, this like an app where they go boop boop boop, and then they get the money then, and then they're going to the movies. And it's a couple different scenarios.
I think I know what you're talking about, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so the logic is you're basically borrowing from yourself, but, in order for the application to get paid you're getting interest on yourself. It's like, can you wait?
Exactly. I mean, there's all sorts of ways of using credit to get people.
So, Jason, I have a few questions for you, and I think you can help out not only myself but people listening when it comes to these creditors. Can a lender or creditor or whatever you want to call these folks, can they garnish your wages?
They can, but they have to win a lawsuit. They can't just say, go to your employer and say, give us this money. They have to go through a lawsuit to do that.
Now, do they do that behind the scenes?
That's the whole process.
Do they do that behind the scenes, or is the debtor part of that? Are they just going to be surprised? Like, they go to their, they open up their paycheck, and they're like, whoa, what the fuck?
They're supposed to notify you, but a lot don't. So technically, they're in the wrong. I mean, if you're not notified, if you can prove it, I mean, I know it's hard to prove, but you can actually use, if you get a judgment against you, a default, what they call a default judgment, which means you didn't show up for court, you can use as an affirmative defense that you were, you didn't know about the whole thing. And then it's up to a judge to decide whether to overturn the judgment.
Now, at what point does that happen when they start garnishing your wages? Is that with the typically with the original lender, or is that you've been passed down?
It can be either way. I mean, the original lender is more dangerous because the chances are higher that they have the contract. The chances are higher that they can prove their case. They have more information available to them, and also they're a lot of times they want their money back. They're not willing to just get a small percentage and move on to the next name in the spreadsheet.
So what is like a typical dollar amount that people should be aware of, like that they're in the hot zone? Is it something like 10 grand? Is it 20 grand?
No, usually the commonly stated point at which you're starting to get in danger of being sued is about 1,000.
Wow.
But the thing is, some of the real sleazy ones, and again, if you challenge them on the account, you can deal with this. You can beat them on this. But a lot of the sleazy ones will have what they'll charge. The count, let's say they count $400. They'll do some, depending on the state, some states limit what they can do, but they'll add interest and they'll jack the cost up. And they'll do all sorts of sleazy bookkeeping tactics to get it to where it's close to 1,000, and they'll sue you.
Oh, jeez.
They fudge numbers, but some states don't allow that. So a debt collector is only supposed to sue on based on the exact amount.
What is your opinion of cash advances from a credit card?
I don't have a problem with it. You just have to plan out what, as far as if you have a credit card account and you're in good standing, and it's, you know what the amount is, what it's going to add to your next month's amount, or you have an idea. I mean, as long as you can pay it back, I don't see a problem with it.
Does that have interest when somebody does a cash advance?
I think so. You'd have to check the terms. I'm not sure about that. I probably ran into trouble when I had my account years ago. I used that more than a few times, and I probably ran into.
They probably had dollar signs in their eyes whenever your name popped up.
Oh yeah, yeah, but. You know, once I was making less money, then it was a problem.
Now
I'm actually past the statute of limitations for most of my accounts, so I'm safe.
Well, that's a good point. When you mentioned the statute of limitations, what are some things that people should know about their debts and when they're getting harassed?
Very good point. I have a point I think is really important to get out there if you want to start learning this stuff. I hear a lot of people, I see a lot of people online saying, I want to clear my credit report up. I want to get negative items off my credit report. And they make the mistake of focusing on that. And what they don't realize is the credit report is one part of the issue. But whether they can sue you is the other. And I think the more important, I think that's the issue you need to take care of first. Because if you don't knock off the collector, meaning make them go away, meaning make them send you a letter that tells you that they're considering the account closed, if you don't do that, even if you were to straighten it out with the debt bureaus, they can keep reporting down the line, and you still have the negative items come back on your report. So you have to solve one issue. And not only that, if you're not focused on the actual account and the legalities behind it, you can find yourself being sued. So you need to take care of that issue first. Then deal with the credit bureau stuff. And I think that's an important point which a lot of people tend to neglect. I mean, if it's a small amount, it's probably not a big issue. If it's like $100, it's one thing. It's unlikely they're going to sue you for that. But if you're getting into some bigger numbers, you might want to take care of one issue before you take care of the other. Cover your flank, so to speak.
What are the general terms of the statute of limitations for most debt?
Basically they can sue you up to whatever the statute of limitation is in that state. New York, it happens to be 6 years. But there's a little catch-22 there in the sense that there was a case called Portfolio, our friends at Portfolio Recovery Associates versus King, or King versus Portfolio Recovery Associates, I forgot who's the plaintiff and defendant. That case, the New York case, the decision, the holding was that basically the whatever state of origin the collector is from, that's the statute of limitations they go by. So in other words, New York has a 6-year statute of limitations if they can sue you. But let's say Capital One, which is based in Virginia, I believe, has a 4-year statute of limitations. It means Capital One can't sue you if it's over 4 years, even if you're in New York.
Oh, so it's based on where the lender is.
Yes, but that's a New York thing. That's not, a lot of states don't have anything like that. It's whatever the statute of limitations are. And statute of limitations change by state. I mean, I'm in Connecticut now. Connecticut has a 3-year statute of limitations for open accounts. Open accounts is basically credit cards, revolving, your sort of your revolving credit sort of scenarios. So I'm past the statute of limitations.
But it's not based on the debt, where the debtor lives.
No, as far as I know, only New York has that rule. It's not even a law. It was a court case, and that becomes what they call stare decisis, which means it serves as a precedent. So, in other words, if you're being sued by Capital One in New York, and the debt is 4.5 years old, you can pull out Portfolio versus King and say, look at this. And they have to take that into account. Probably the case will get thrown out.
Now, would you recommend negotiating with creditors?
Personally, I don't. I don't. I mean, it depends on your situation. I mean, you know, you get someone who, it all depends on how much you need your credit fixed, how fast you need it. If you're buying a house in 2 months, you may have no choice just to make them go away. The problem is if they know you need the money, if you show any desperation, then they're going to want more of the original amount. Whereas if you show you don't care, you can probably negotiate lower. My personal advice to people is if you don't need to, once it's at the point where it's in collection age and when it's in third party, I mean, I consider, this is my fundamental theory on third party debt collectors. I consider them the equivalent of someone going through your recycling bin, pulling out an old bill, taking this Photoshop or whatever, and changing it around so that they're suddenly the holder of this amount, and coming to you and saying, you owe me this amount of money. I mean, it's like, who is this person? That's about as much claim as they really have to it. So why would you pay them?
So if you ignore them, you get into one bucket, but if you establish contact, you get into another, right? Which is better?
Well, number one, a big thing of settling with them is you might, through the course of trying to settle with them, unless you do it very strategically, you might admit to the debt. In which case, if you like fall into a disagreement with them later, they have proof that you said you owed the debt, and if it goes to court.
Oh yeah, another thing too, like with my, in my situation, getting this letter, like I never got a phone. I've never gotten one phone call. It's just this one letter, which is pretty half-assed. Right.
Yeah, and a lot of them are like that. They look, like I said, there's spreadsheets, these Excel spreadsheets. They've got 1,000 names on it or 500 names on each portfolio, each bundle. They're trying to collect. If they pay, this is what a lot of people don't even realize, they're paying pennies on the dollar. Typical debt is like 4 to 7 cents on the dollar. So, for all these debts, and let's say they bought, I don't know, $10 million worth of debts, and they paid $200,000, I'm probably going way over. Let's say they paid $10,000 for that, $15,000. If they can collect on 20 or 30 people out of a bundle of like 600 names or whatever, they've already made the money back, and anything after that's just profit.
So, hence why they've got employees like in like chicken cages just making phone calls and just tossing fast food at them.
The profit, I mean, that's why so many people get into that business. The profit margins are enormous.
And no overhead, because they're not making anything.
Right. They have, like, they're not producing anything. That's why they're like the parasites of the economic world or the financial world. They don't produce anything, but they're there. Like, there's one, LVNV. I looked at their year, one of their year-end sheets, you know, their year-end summer, corporate summaries. And they were saying that they paid, I think it was $20 million for, it was like, they paid $20 million for like $1 billion worth of debt. The actual numbers were $1 billion. But they made $90 million out of that. Basically, they got $90 million from people. So they basically, essentially, it's a $70 million profit.
Wow. Doing nothing.
Yeah, doing nothing except for harassing people.
Wow.
That's it. That's
how, the business. How concerned should people be about their credit score? And I guess a better question is, how concerned should they be about these debt collectors accessing their credit score?
Well, here's where it gets interesting. There are laws about getting into the I said before there's the FDCPA, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. There's also the FCRA, the Fair Credit Reporting Act. And by using that, you could theoretically claim that they don't have, the third party doesn't have a contract with you. And if they don't have a contract with you, then they can't, then they shouldn't be accessing your account. A lot of people don't think to pull this out.
So if they do, it's not lawful?
Right, then they're breaking the law by accessing your. A lot of people will actually call them out on it, and they'll make them back off.
Is it
the risk of that? What
is it? Wise to record any conversation you have with a collector?
Well, it depends. You have to look up what your state's recording laws are. If you're going to do that, they have what they call the one-party consent or two-party consent. Two-party consent means both parties have to, you are required to tell them
I think in New York you don't need that, right? I think in New York you don't need the visa.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to look up the specifics, but yeah, if it's a one party consent, then you're the party. You're the party consenting. I don't know if you've ever seen. I sent you the link, but people out there should check out on YouTube. There's a guy, I like him. He posts on YouTube, and he gets calls from these debt collectors.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
The Mad Arab 138. If you get a chance, look him up. And what he does is he'll say to the people, I have no contract with you. And now, theoretically, if you sign a credit card or whatever agreement, there's a fine print, and I looked at a few agreements, and they say that they have the right to, if you default, they have the right to assign. They call it assigning the account, which is basically what they use to be able to. That's the justification for debt collect for these third parties even existing. They've been assigned the account, but here's the thing: in order for that to be a legitimate, lawful point, they have to prove a contract. A debt collector just saying, "Oh, when you signed the credit card agreement, you signed a clause. Part of it was a clause saying that the original creditor can sign the account. Okay, that's fine, but show the contract, an assigned contract, not just any copy, generic copy, a signed contract. Where did I sign that contract? Where did I agree to that? They can't." They almost certainly cannot. And that's what he hits them on.
Right, that's the one that, I think the link, that the video I saw was, he was being harassed about some gym membership or something.
Exactly. Well, the one that was, there's one that's like 10 minutes long where he's talking to a guy, and that guy's not even clear what his purpose is, because he's saying he's not even collecting the account, he's there to put in collections, so he's just sitting on it, essentially, but he's asking him to pay, but he doesn't have the legitimate claim, and that's the guy who gets real annoyed with.
Oh, yeah, it's like a game of chicken at the end, right? He won't hang up.
Yeah, that one, I'm not even, that guy was like a scam operation. That was like a real low level. They're used to just scaring people into paying. They don't even know how to handle somebody who questions. So this guy, but he essentially says, I did not contract with you. And he's right. You did not contract with them. Their answer is, but you signed a contract, and that contract gave a right to assign. Well, how do I know that number one, how do you know there was a contract that I signed? All you got is an Excel spreadsheet. And number two, how do you know, or how do I know that you're the legitimate assignee of said contract? I don't. Or said account, I should say.
I forget. I don't. What's the visual that you look at when you watch the videos?
You mean from the Mad Arab, or from the person on the other end?
Yeah, is it? I can't remember. He has video of the person on the other end?
No. He just shows like the one that's the guy. When he's talking to the guy from the probably fraudulent collection agency, it's just a guy with a suit and tie yelling. It's just like a picture.
Oh, right. Okay.
And yeah. Then when he's talking with the girl, I think it's just a picture of a girl in a cubicle, but that could be anything.
Right. So yeah, I'll put a link up for everybody for it's the Mad Arab. Is he Arab, or he's just
no? I think. His name is like a real Italian name, Matthew.
Yeah, he sounds like an Italian American guy.
Yeah, but he does it perfectly, because you know they just have no, they don't know how to deal with him. There's no argument to the point he makes.
Right.
You're right. You don't have a contract. That's what a lot of people don't think about calling them out on.
Well, I think people get really, I think, you know, people get emotional when they, you know, they know that a debt is out there. You know, they know that they're in debt and they get a call and they panic.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So I guess, Jason, you know, it's about that time, just kind of in closing. What are some things that people need to know if a creditor or one of these, you know, Popeyes eating people are threatening you? You know, not just calling you to say, like, hey, what's going on? By the way, I've never understood, why do they have to be so mean? Like, why can't they just say, like, hey, I'm tired? Why can't they use the honey, you know, the honey approach? Why do they have to be jerks?
Some of them apparently do. I mean, a lot of them apparently do use that. But a lot of them tend to be pricks, too. You know, they have all sorts of different ways of doing their job. But, yeah, they cannot be threatening or abusive. If they do that, it's a violation right off the bat of the FDCPA. They do that, you can actually get a $1,000 chunk of change out of them.
So what are some things that people should listen out for or be aware of?
Yeah, I have a simple strategy with dealing with this stuff, relatively simple. You can get very complicated in how you look at it, and looking at contract. I've been reading a lot on contract law and all this stuff. And so you can really go down a long rabbit hole with that and poke holes in their arguments if you know contract law. But to keep it relatively simple, I think there's three points you should call them out on. Whether you do it, preferably, it's always better to deal with them in writing than it is on the phone. I don't advocate talking to them on the phone because they can trick you into something. They can get you to say a word.
And they're recording on their end usually, right?
Yeah, they're recording. They tell you right off the bat they're recording. So if you don't dispute that, then that's tacit acceptance. Then even if it's a two-state permission, they're not in any violation because they told you and you didn't say, don't record me. But the three points are basically contract, mm-hmm. Number one. Call them out on the contract. Was a signed contract, not just some piece of paper that somebody printed out somewhere. Number two, the chain of assignment that you demand a chain of assignment, knowing who exactly had access to your account, because sometimes it doesn't go to one debt collector; it goes to two or three. One can't collect; they sell it down the line, and it just goes. If they cannot prove a signed chain of assignment, that's a big one right there. Because who owns the account? It could be anybody, any jerk off who went to the garbage can and found a piece of paper calling you and demanding this money. So you need to have that chain of assignment. And number three, and this is the most important point, because this one they almost certainly can't, and they have no answer for. What they call some certain. And some certain basically means, how is this, if somebody comes to you and says, you owe me $2,700, how did you arrive at that sum? How did you come to that amount of money? Well, you took out a loan 10 years ago for $2,000. Okay. But how is it now $2,700? What made it I'm demanding the exact accounting over the life of the loan, where interest rates were applied, where late fees were applied, all of the application. They can't. They don't have that, especially a third-party debt collector. They don't have that information. I think if you ask for all three of those things, probably 98% of the time, you got them over a barrel. Maybe there's that 2% that would be able to answer. And even if they answer all of those three things, there's other. If you really want to go deep down the rabbit hole into the accounting procedures and all of that stuff, you can still have plenty on them. But that's where this gets real complicated.
Awesome. Jason, thank you so much for doing this. This is very enlightening and I think very empowering for people who are in these situations that may be a little intimidated by or intimidated and maybe embarrassed of their situations. So I think this is very empowering. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, people should not be, I just want to make one more point. And I see this on forums, on online forums and Facebook groups and stuff. People go through rough patches. People have rough situations. And every once in a while, you get some jackass who comes into the picture and says, "Well, if you just paid your bills, this wouldn't happen." and these people are just moronic. I mean, they don't get that. Yeah, okay, maybe some people just didn't pay and bought a boat or whatever and bought this and bought that. But a lot of people just hit hard times and they genuinely would like to pay back. But by the time it becomes an adversarial relationship, then things change. And also, by saying, "Well, if you just paid your bills, this wouldn't happen," doesn't take into account the fact that is the person asking these questions of you, demanding money out of you, is that person a legitimate holder of that account in the first place? Or would you just pay him, and then all of a sudden a legitimate holder comes to you 6 months later and demands the same amount of money?
Yeah, and it's not really...
You have rights. In the Constitution, you have a right to due process, and you have a right to equal protection. And there are rights involved here. And people don't, just coming in and saying, "Well, if you just paid your bills, you said it wouldn't happen." Well, then that solves nothing.
So you don't advocate to the financial advice of paper in, paper out?
Yeah, that one solves a lot of dilemmas.
All right. Jason, thanks again.
Oh, my pleasure.
Friday night, never feel the hunter, place in my money in my pocket, booty shake.